अविस्मितं तं परिपूर्णकामम् स्वेनैव लाभेन समं प्रशान्तम् विनोपसर्पति अपि रम्हि बालिशः श्वलाङ्गुलेनातितितर्ति सन्धुम् लेडीज़ प्लीज़ अविस्मितं तं परिपूर्णकामम् स्वेनैव लाभेन समं प्रशान्तम् विनोपसर्पति अपरं हि बालिशः श्वलाङ्गुलेनातितितर्ति सिन्धुम् अविस्मितं तं परिपूर्णकामम् स्वेनैव लाभेन समं प्रशान्तम् विनोपसर्पति अपरं हि बालिशः श्वलाङ्गुलेनातितितर्ति सिन्धुम् अविस्मितम् Who is never struck with wonder. Tam, him, paripurna kamam, who is fully satisfied. Svena, by his own. Eva, indeed. Labhena, achievements. Samam, equipoised. Prashantam, very steady. Vina, without. Upasarpati, approaches. Aparam, another. He, indeed. Balishaha, a fool. Shva, of a dog. Langulena, by the tail. Atititarti, wants to cross. Sindhum, the sea. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Free from all material conceptions of existence and never wonder struck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by his own spiritual perfection. He has no material designations and therefore he is steady and unattached. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. Purport. A dog can swim in the water, but if a dog dives in the ocean and someone wants to cross the ocean by holding the dog's tail, he is certainly fool number one. A dog cannot cross the ocean, nor can a person cross the ocean by catching a dog's tail. Similarly, one who desires to cross the ocean of nations should not seek the shelter of any demigod or anyone else, but the fearless shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 58, therefore says, Samashitaye padapallavaplavam महत्पदं पुण्ययशो मुरारे भवाम्बुदेर्वत्स पदं परं पदं 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 यत् विपदां न तेषां. The Lord's lotus feet are an indestructible boat, and if one takes shelter of that boat, he can easily cross the ocean of nations. Consequently, there are no dangers for a devotee, although he lives within this material world, which is full of dangers at every step. One should seek the shelter of the all-powerful instead of trying to be protected by one's own concocted ideas. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हे कृष्ण, दिस प्रेयर्स आर बीइंग ऑफर्ड बाय द डेमिगॉड्स। It says, Shri Deva Uchuhu. The demigods are speaking. They're actually offering prayers to the Supreme Lord because they're faced by this massive demon called Vritrasura. And we heard yesterday the descriptions of how Vritrasura was growing day by day as if arrows were shot in four different directions. I mean, he was growing very quickly. And he was not just growing in one dimension, like this, or like that, but he was growing in all directions. Very big, massive. With his eyes red colored, his hair and beard the color of molten copper. And he was so fearsome that the demigods, who were actually very powerful in and of themselves, didn't know what to do. So they are praying to Krishna for his protection. And they are saying that although they themselves, the demigods, are capable of providing shelter and protection to the people in general within the universe, they find themselves inadequate. They find themselves inadequate to even protect themselves. However, persons, they actually approach the demigods for all varieties of reasons. And they seek different kinds of benedictions. Yesterday we heard, what would one have to choose, whether to be Hiranyakashipu or what was the other one? Choose between Hiranyakashipu and Vritrasura. So when persons come to the demigods seeking their protection, and even if the demigods say, sure, we'll protect you, the protection is not absolute. Ravana, he prayed to Lord Shiva. And he also prayed to Lord Brahma, actually. Lord Brahma gave him some very amazing benedictions. And Ravana, among all the other personalities that he asked protection from, he did not ask protection from the humans. Just as we may pray to Krishna, please protect me from such and such persons or calamities. We don't say, please protect me from the ant. Because we know, ant means we can easily kill. So Ravana also said, human beings, not a problem. So the Lord appeared within the human race and finished him off. Or Hiranyakashipu had all these, so many ways in which he wanted to checkmate Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma said, yes, yes, no problem. And Lord Narsingadeva appeared and we did not defy any of the promises of Lord Brahma, but still took care of him. So demigods, although they're very powerful, they're finding themselves inadequate. Inadequate in the sense that they feel that they are like this dog, that if the persons who are their followers hold on to their tails thinking, I'm following this particular demigod, I will achieve liberation. The demigods themselves are saying, that's very foolish. So Prabhupada says, a dog can swim in the water, but if he dives in the ocean and someone holds on to his tail, they cannot make it. Even the dog will drown. When Prabhupada was in Bombay and he was preaching to all these very rich people, Some of them asked, "What is wrong with worshipping Lord Shiva? And why do you say he is a demigod? Can one not have pure bhakti for Lord Shiva?" And Prabhupada said, "If someone has pure bhakti for Lord Shiva, it is very rare. It is very rare. One can have, but it is very rare. For most reasons, when they see Lord Shiva, from their heart, they will only ask material desires. So it's very rare that they will ask for pure bhakti. Therefore we say, don't worship the demigods." And he says, "Anyone who's desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog." So the only personality of whose shelter one should take to cross over this material existence is the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Swamiji, you only say, when he was in India, you say that Krishna is the cause of all causes. He is sarva karana karanam. Who's the cause of Krishna?" So Prabhupada said, "From all different Vedic scriptures, we understand that Krishna is the cause of all causes and that he has no cause. So we offer all our bhakti to him. If you can find a cause for Krishna, we will stop worshipping Krishna and worship whoever that cause is. So when you find out, you let us know. Until then, we are worshipping Krishna." So we rely on Vedic scriptures, specifically the Bhagavatam. And it describes that the lotus feet of the Lord are like a boat. Ye pada pallavam. Pada pallavam. Pallava means boat. Krishna's lotus feet are a boat, or like a boat, that help one cross the ocean of material existence. That's why one of the names of the Lord is Mukunda, one who provides mukti. And he says, "Bhavam budhir vatsa padam param padam." Bhavam budhi, this massive ocean of existence, material existence. In Sanskrit, the word bhava means to exist or to be. Even Lord Shiva is called bhava because he is the medium through which all living entities manifest in this world. So they're called bhava, means the to be born, to die, to born again, to die again, like that. This cycle of birth and death. And it's compared to ambudi, an ocean. An ocean because it is massive, it is deep, and it is something that one cannot fully understand, one cannot fully explore, and one cannot cross easily. When we see a large body of water, generally the first feeling is either awe or fear. So we are in this ocean of material existence, bhavam budhir. And we don't know how to cross it. There are a couple of problems. One is, people don't know how to cross it. And the worst is, most people don't even care. They don't even consider the possibility that there is something beyond this ocean of existence. They're happy or sad, but they think that the all in all is this ocean of existence. In this life form, in that life form. And there is enough distraction to not worry about these things. Right? There is enough distractions like what we call material happiness, so-called goals of life, money, enjoyment from that money, and a little bit of social work or altruism, etc. And people are quite busy in that. And if they're if someone helps them to see that beyond this, there is a whole realm of existence they're not interested. They either they don't have the time or they're just not interested. They have too many questions, too many doubts. They're rather happy in this ocean of existence. To go beyond is not so much interest because it's an unknown realm. Sometimes they say, unknown devil is better than an unknown angel. At least you know the devil. Oh, I know what to expect. So they say, you know what to expect. And in case I don't know what to expect, at least I've seen others' lives and it's all right. A little bit of suffering is there, but the whatever I'm trying to do and achieve in my life, it's not so bad after all. Or they don't want to be the only person who's different. When everyone is doing the same thing, I should do something different. I don't have to be like an outlier. Why can't I just be normal? If everyone is doing the same thing, are you telling me that everyone is going to suffer? Yes. Oh no, come on. There are so many people who are enjoying life. They're having a good time. And they can give us a long list. And all of this is because their ability to perceive the futility of materialistic life doesn't exist. That vision doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because there is enough distraction and in one sense a little material happiness that comes that is like the incentive to continue. I often quote a story that I like very much. So every time I get an opportunity, I like to talk about it. There was a man who was he was walking through a forest. And as he was walking, he heard the rumbling of some leaves behind him. So he thought, someone is following me. He didn't have the strength to look behind who that was. So he kept walking fast. Right? When you feel someone's following you and you don't want to make it obvious that you know, you tend to walk fast just to see if you can outpace the person. So he was walking fast and he heard the rumbling of leaves also go faster behind him. So he said, man, this is something, maybe some animal. So he started running and he felt that the animal, whoever was chasing him, was also running. So in his desperation as he was running, he was not looking where he was running. And he fell into a what we call blind well. And as he was falling through the blind well, he stretched his arms out, trying to grope to something at least that he can not fall to the ground. That was a narrow well, and as he was falling down, somehow he held on to something. And he was very happy. He couldn't see exactly what it was, but he held something. And after hanging there for a few minutes, he looked up and he saw a ferocious tiger looking down. So he said, oh, I'm saved. So how long can he hang there? We say hanging in there. Right? How long can he hang there? So he thought, I'll go to the bottom of the well. It's a blind well, so it must not have water. I'll go down and see if there is a place I can rest. And when the tiger is gone, I will try to get out of it. So he tried to go down a little bit and he heard a hissing noise. So he knew it was a deadly snake down there. So he said, hanging there is much better. So he was hanging. And naturally, after a couple of minutes of anxiety, because human being is inquisitive, he was looking around to see if he can make sense of what's going on, where he's at, you know, he wants to know some details. So when he looks to his left and right, he sees two little shiny objects on this side and two little shiny objects on the other side. So he squints a little bit more to find out what those lights are, and he sees that these are two mice, one black mouse and one white mouse. And to make things worse, they look at him, they smile, and they start nibbling at the vines that he's holding on to. So now he knows that those vines are being gnawed at, and very soon they will snap. He'll be at the bottom of the well, ready to be bitten by a snake. So he's very anxious. And he looks up, and his anxiety is trying to figure out what to do. And suddenly something drops on his cheek. Well, so he needs to know. What would he like to know? He needs to know what that thing is that fell on his cheek. So the only way to find out is to taste it. So he extends his tongue out somehow to get to that little drop, to know what is going on in the middle of all of this. And somehow he gets a little taste of it. And it's a drop of fresh organic honey. So he's really going, wow, some honey. So now he extends his tongue out with his mouth open, waiting for that next drop to fall right there so he doesn't have to work too hard for it. He's waiting. So once in a while, a drop falls in his mouth. Once in a while, it drops on his forehead. So he feels like, oh, almost there. I almost got it, but I didn't all the way get it there. And he forgets the precarious condition that he's in. With the tiger on the top, the deadly snake at the bottom, the two mice biting at the vines. It's described that this is the condition of all of us. Material life is considered to be like a dark well in which we are hanging by the vines, which are our lifespan. And the two mice are the day and night, the white and black are the day and night, and they're slowly and surely biting at our lifespan, right? Because with each passing day, we are one day closer to death. And the tiger is the whole list of problems that we're trying to run away from. And the more we run, the faster they seem to chase us. Of course, the deadly snake at the bottom of the well is death, waiting. And the little drops of honey are these materialistic pleasures. So while a person is very eager to taste these drops of honey, the honey has such a intoxicating and hypnotic effect that it makes the person totally oblivious to the precarious condition that he or she is in the material realm. And even if they try to make something of it, they cannot cross it. They cannot get out. If we need someone who's outside the well, who's not hanging or in a precarious condition as we are, to bring us out. That is the personality of Godhead or his representative, the spiritual master. And Prabhupada says, a person whose hands are tied cannot untie another person. Only a person whose hands are free can untie. So the point here is that if someone is worthy of taking shelter of, then other than the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, there isn't another. There isn't one other. One may think there are these great demigods, or in the last line, Prabhupada writes, one should seek the shelter of the all-powerful instead of trying to be protected by one's own concocted ideas. One's own concocted ideas is a different ideologies that one comes up with of how to solve the problems of life. But for most people, they don't even know what is or what are the problems of life. The problems of life that a person is busy solving are the ones that are what we say just the symptoms and not the cause of the problem. The symptoms are unending. And as we keep solving one symptom after another, new symptoms appear. And solving symptoms is not fulfilling. It just keeps us busy. But if one takes care of the root cause of the problem, then there are no symptoms anymore. One can do other things with life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that when there is a large reservoir of water that is available, then one doesn't need to look for water in small reservoirs or small wells. Or Prabhupada would say, if you have $1 million, then all your $5 problems are automatically taken care of. Similarly, or it is to help us understand that one who's sheltered by Krishna, then they're not disturbed by the symptoms of materialistic existence. And the symptoms are many. Not only are they many, they're also very individual for each one of us. What I'm suffering from may or may not be what someone else is suffering from. Because symptoms are very, very unique and individual. Sometimes there are common symptoms, a common cold. Everyone has sniffles and runny nose and red eyes and all that. But sometimes the diseases are very unique. Regardless, we understand that the core of the problem is that one has turned away from Krishna. And because of turning away from Krishna, not having a relationship with Krishna, one is within this bhavambudhi, the ocean of materialistic existence. And in the ocean, one cannot solve one's problem. One cannot swim across an ocean. Sometimes one cannot even if one thinks one has a boat, it is not powerful enough to take one across the ocean. The boat of all our different kinds of plans and ideas that one may have. So it's described bhavam buddhir. However, for a person who does take shelter of Krishna, sincerely, genuinely, this ocean suddenly transforms into, he says, vatsapadam. Vatsapadam means, actually it means the hoof of a calf. Vatsa. A calf is called a vatsa. Vatsapadam is the footprint of a calf, which is very small. So the ocean shrinks to something that is so small in size that to cross that is not a problem. Like we don't even notice it. And one goes, Vatsapadam. And this Vatsapadam leads us to Parampadam. Parampadam means the ultimate goal of life, ultimate stage or step. Padam means step or goal. Parampadam, the ultimate goal. This bhava or material existence is such that it says padam padam at every step, yet vipadam. Vipadam means danger. At every step there is danger. What is the danger? The danger of birth, old age, disease and death. And for one who is a sadhaka, the danger is of forgetting Krishna again. So we are asked by Prabhupada to cultivate our minds and our consciousness in such a way that at every step we don't face that danger, or we try to remember to Krishna. We try to remember Krishna. This is our practice, padam padam, at every step. Why? Because at every step there is danger, vipadam. Of course, here it says vipadam na tesham. For such persons, there is no such danger. Who are such persons? Samasrita ye pada pallava plavam. Samasrita, one who has taken complete shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. In our Nectar of Devotion, discussion, we are exactly at the section where Prabhupada is discussing surrender or submission. And he describes, and we were discussing in our class, that surrender is not something that happens in one step. The exercise was, I would say the word surrender, and others would shout out whatever comes to mind when they hear the word surrender. And our discussion was, the different words came out, difficult, or slavery, or unnatural, or very difficult, etc. And so we discussed, what are some of the characteristics of surrender? And some things that we should remember. One is, it doesn't happen in one step. It is rare. It is possible, but it is rare. Like Khatwanga Maharaj, happened in a moment's time. But for most persons, Prabhupada said, it's gradual. Because we have fruitive mentality and super speculative tendencies. So it's first, a submission or a surrender is gradual. Second, surrender is not a loss, it's a victory. In the material connotation, surrender is a loss. Two people are fighting, or two countries are fighting, two parties are fighting, and one fellow will open, flash the white flag and say, I surrender, I give up. Ha ha ha, you lose. Yeah? Surrender to Krishna is not a loss, it's the greatest gain. Because what we gain by surrendering to Krishna is fearlessness, especially in this context, fearlessness. It is fear that keeps a living entity very, very busy in the material world. So busy that he's constantly thinking about how to counteract it. Fear in all sorts of degrees or intensities. So it's described that the lotus feet of the Lord provide fearlessness. We heard yesterday, that's why Krishna's lotus feet are called Abhay Charanaravinda. The fearless lotus feet. The lotus feet at which there is no fear. Another thing about surrender is, it is not something that we do in the past and then that takes us further. It is something that is done every day, in fact every moment. And the moments that we are not surrendered, in those moments we are exposed to, or we become vulnerable to, fear, etc. Fear, lamentation, illusion. These are characteristics of the materialistic existence. In fact, the Bhagavatam describes that the moment we experience fear or anxiety, the first indicator for us is, I've forgotten Krishna. Bhayam dvitiya abhivineshatasyat. The bhayam, fear, is an indicator of abhivineshita, means the beginning of duality. That means forgetfulness of Krishna. And so naturally the solution is to remember Krishna. When one remembers Krishna, it's there in the Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, in text 12, report, Prabhupada writes, that fear is an indicator of forgetfulness of Krishna. And when one remembers Krishna, the fear starts abating. Always. Okay. Because when we see Krishna, when we hear about Krishna, Krishna's protective nature, then there is no fear. Or the fear has, what we say, right-sized. In the material world, even the smallest of things causes greatest of fears. For example, for some persons, when they see a little bug in the room, the fear is very big. They freak out. Or a mouse, or something, a bat, or something. Suddenly the fear becomes quite disproportionate to the real state of what one should be. Of course, if there's a lion in the room and someone freaks out, that's not disproportionate, exactly. We can understand. But a bug? Ah. So, one thing to know is to right size the fear. It's not that one cannot have fear, one should not have fear. It's the right sizing it. At least to survive in the material world, you have to right size of fear. And beyond that is to become fearless. Now, fearlessness does not mean stupid or foolish. That we do things in the name of fearlessness. Caution still exists. Intelligence is still working. Like in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, Prabhupada would say, we are not this body. This material world is made of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. The body is also made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. The soul is non-material, so it has no restrictions. So at that time, these young devotees, Brahmananda Prabhu and his brother, Garga Muni Prabhu, every day they would experiment to see if I continue thinking, I am not this body, I am not this body, can I walk through a wall? And they would walk into a wall and hit themselves. Then they realized that that's not how you come to self-realization, just by saying, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. Young experimenting, lots of wonderful things. Fearlessness means that I am confident of Krishna's shelter. However, the outcomes of life may manifest. Fearless doesn't mean that certain outcomes will not come. They will come. But that I am confident of Krishna's protection. I am confident that Krishna will not leave me or abandon me. And feeling that protection of Krishna, Prabhupada and Prabhupada's disciples and other devotees too, do some many fearless things. Fearlessness, in another way, is we doubt our own capacity. We doubt or we are not sure of what all we are capable of. In fact, when we understand that we are parts and parcels of Krishna, and by Krishna's empowerment, one can do anything in the service of Krishna, of course. We want to do anything in the service of Krishna. That empowerment will come, and we may surprise ourselves. So that is that the fear is our sense of feeling inhibited or not complete or something that stops us from imagining what we could do. When Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples, go start a magazine, start a center, do this and do that, which was really unheard of. They went to all sorts of places. Even Srila Prabhupada, when I've been thinking about this for the past few days. If let's say my spiritual master or someone that I look up to were to give me a service that said, go to such and such place, wherever, and start something. Even in this modern age where there is so much communication, all that available, still, the sense of whatever fear or uncertainty would, at least for me, would be very strong. In Srila Prabhupada's case, when his spiritual master said, go to the Western world, and the way he made it on a boat, Jaladuta ship, cargo ship, with heart attacks along the way, and without really too much contacts with in America, except one address in some far out place called Butler, Pennsylvania, lands in Boston, doesn't know anyone. And even when he tried to write to the devotees to say, please help or come, let's do this together, not getting any response or not getting any encouragement. With that stage of life, speaking to young hippies, I mean, the only thing that kept him is that confidence, that fearlessness. And Prabhupada was not fearful about anything. And as a side note, not only was that confidence, Prabhupada had this intense desire. Apparently, if he liked something, then he went to any extent to get it. In Bombay, when the issue with Mr. Nair, the guy, Prabhupada called him a demon, for troubling the devotees and troubling him with that land where now the Juhu temple is standing. There was a property right adjunct to that. And this particular person who was the owner, he knew that Prabhupada needed that piece of land as well to construct and make this project happen. So originally he had said that he would donate the land. But then when he saw that Prabhupada acquired the land from Mr. Nair, and this person became greedy. So he wanted suddenly some money for that land. So the rumor was from free, he now wanted 20,000 rupees, which is a lot of money. Yeah, we should go back to 1971 or 72. So when Prabhupada came to Bombay, the devotees told Prabhupada he wants some money. And Prabhupada said, ask him how much. And that person was not ready to negotiate with the devotees. He said, I want to meet Swamiji. So as soon as Prabhupada landed in Bombay, he went to his house. So he received Prabhupada, sat down in a room, and the first question this person pops from his mouth is, how much will you give for this land, Swamiji? So Prabhupada said, how much do you want? Because in India, there's a practice. You don't say a price. You ask the other person, how much will you give? And if you don't like what you hear, then you negotiate from there. You never say what the price is. So he asked, so Prabhupada asked him, how much do you want? No, Swamiji, how much will you give? How much do you want? No, how much will you give? How much do you want? And Prabhupada was very forceful. So he said, 30,000 rupees. Prabhupada said, done. Give him the money, and he walked out of the room. And Prabhupada turned to the devotees and he said, from my childhood, whatever I wanted, I would get it. It didn't matter to what extent I had to go to get it. I would get it. I had this thing in me. I had to get it. So he had to get that land. And to this fellow, he didn't even give him any room for negotiation. He said, 30,000, done. Because he was on a particular mission, he just went straight from one thing to another. Of course, that's just a side Prabhupada pastime. But the sense of confidence that Prabhupada carried with himself is not something that we have within ourselves independent of Krishna. So this feeling sheltered is in Sanskrit called Sanatha. Sanatha means one, sa means with. Sanatha means one with a master. When one has a master, one feels protected. Then the opposite of Sanatha is Anatha. Anatha means one without a master. So we hear the Prabhupada would give the example of a stray dog. A stray dog is walking around, barking at other dogs, marking his territory. And then when other dogs come, he growls and shows his fangs, and other dogs also bark at him, and they fight and they bite each other. Even if this guy is a big dog, still, he's always vulnerable to being attacked. On the other hand, a dog who has a master, he happily strolls on the road, and if other dogs growl, very quickly the master will pick him up or hold him, and with a leash around his neck, he's very confident because there's a master to protect. So this protection, feeling protected by Krishna, from our side, feeling protected by Krishna is one of the elements of surrender. Like he was asking yesterday, what does surrender really mean? There are six angas of surrender. And the more one cultivates these six angas or limbs, the more one becomes surrendered to Krishna. The first is accepting those things that are favorable for one's service to Krishna, or accepting those things that are favorable to Krishna. Even if we don't like them. And the second is giving up of those things or activities that are unfavorable to Krishna, even if we like them. Third is feeling and living in such a way that the idea that Krishna is my only maintainer becomes stronger day by day. Generally, people think that if I'm living in the temple, Krishna is taking care of me. If I'm working outside and I have a job, I'm taking care of myself. No, it's not like that. Krishna is taking care of everyone there outside as well, indirectly. We were talking about this, I forget where, about money. A person might think, oh, I am being maintained by my salary and my company is giving my salary. No, actually it is Krishna's money. Krishna's putting in their pocket, so they will put it in our pocket, so we'll put it back in Krishna's pocket. That's how it works. But it's Krishna's money anyway. Krishna is the maintainer. Krishna is maintaining the atheists, maintaining the theists, the agnostics, everyone. The ants, the birds, the beasts, bugs, everyone. But to feel on a day-to-day basis that Krishna is my only maintainer. Then the fourth one is that Krishna is my only protector. The tendency is to fall into or gravitate towards those things and persons that we used to think are our protectors. Role models, the ideologies, other things that we have created for ourselves as items or elements of protection. The usual categories that Queen Kunti gives are Janmaishwarya Shuta Shri, one's family lineage. I have come from a great family, that's my protection. Or Aishwarya, my wealth, my opulence. Shruta, my beauty, and Shri. Shruta is knowledge, and Shri is beauty. And these are not our shelters. Krishna is our shelter. Then, dainyam. Dainyam means humility. Humility is considered to be the greatest protector or the medium of taking shelter of Krishna. But somewhere I heard that humility is like the eyelid that protects the eye. And a devotee's humility is so natural that any object that comes towards the eyelid automatically shuts down or shuts to protect the eye. In sadhana bhakti, you have to remember, close your eye. We have to remind ourselves, close your eye. And by the time we have to tell ourselves, we had a black eye or something, and say, oh, next time I'll close it. And the next time it happens again. We learn like that, we practice. And I forget the sixth one. Atmanivedana, thank you. Atmanivedana means offering everything that's in the category of mine. Anything that we call mine, that's offered to Krishna. Atma is the body, the mind, and the soul. आत्मनिवेदन. देयरफॉर भक्तिविनोद ठाकुर सेड, जो किच्छु मोरा, वॉट एवर आई कंसिडर्ड माइन, अर्पिनो तु आपदे, आई एम ऑफरिंग एट योर लोटस फीट. जनरली द टेंडेंसी इज टू होल्ड बैक, दिस इज माइन, नथिंग इज आर्स. एटलीस्ट इन द भगवद गीता कृष्ण सेज निर्माण मोह जित संग दोष अध्यात्म नित्य विनिवृत्त काम द्वंद्वैर विमुक्ता सुख दुख संगे गच्छन्ति मूढ पदमव्ययम् तत्. निर्माण मोह, दिस निर्माण मोह इज वन हुज फ्री ऑफ माना. माना इज दिस प्रेस्टीज, प्रेस्टीज और दिस आइडिया दैट समथिंग बिलोंग्स टू मी, आई हैव समथिंग ऑफ वैल्यू, दिस इज कॉल्ड माना. निर्माण is free of that moha, free of that illusion that I'm actually thinking it's mine. Therefore Prabhupada, he would laugh at the so-called renunciates, who would say, I renounce this world. And Prabhupada would say, it's like going and standing in front of, he used the example of American Express Bank. Suppose we stand in front of American Express Bank and say, I renounce this bank. It's a laughing matter. It's not yours anyway. So we are taught that the illusion is to think something belongs to me. The reality is everything belongs to Krishna. And therefore we use it in Krishna's service. So for the past couple of days, we've been hearing Maharaj speak about Yukta Vairagya. So last night I was reading something about Giriraj Maharaj's memoirs, in which there was this discussion of Yukta Vairagya. So I'll try to remember the details. One person asked Srila Prabhupada, please help me understand the difference in Yukta Vairagya, understand Yukta Vairagya properly. Because we see that the six Goswamis, they were completely renounced. They gave up everything. They wore a kopin, loincloth, and they walked around and they had nothing. They didn't possess anything. So they actually gave up stuff. And we also see the example of, I gave a king's name, I forget which king, either Parikshit Maharaj or Yudhishthir Maharaj. He was a great king. And we say that he was also renounced. So when do we know to renounce or to have opulence? Because we have the example of the Goswamis. We also have example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who would talk about these great kings. So Prabhupada gave him an answer. He said, in the Vedic system, it is described how a chaste wife lives. Prabhupada said, when the husband leaves town, he's not there, then she lives very simply. She wears simple cloth, doesn't really put on makeup or anything, just lives very simply, eats very simply. And when the husband is back, she puts on nice sari, oils her hair, puts on all the makeup, cooks all lavishly like that. But it is all for the husband. When he's not there, she's living simply because he's not there. And when he's there, she's doing all this because he's there. So this point of focus is the husband. Similarly, for our Goswamis or devotees, the point of focus is Krishna. So when service is such, then they live this way. And when the service is such, they live that way. Depends on what the service is. So the person knows. So it's not about what we own or possess. It's about how we use it with Krishna in the center of it. So back to Bhavam Budhir. This ocean of material existence is such that we have a tendency to claim things as ours. And because we claim things as ours, there is a fear that they will go away. So, questions comes 8:30. I didn't realize. Jitendra Prabhu?
Prabhupada put those things in a category of what we put our faith in that are really called fallible soldiers. Term.
Atma-saineshu asat-sopi. He said we put our faith in persons or things that are fallible.
Another thing is, Srila Prabhupada was at the Los Angeles temple and he went out. He saw the deities and he was very impressed. And then he went out on a morning walk and a devotee said to him, he said, Prabhupada, the deities look very beautiful today. And he says, yes, this is what I worry about. When I leave, the standard will fall. So I guess he did have several, fears that we wouldn't rise to the occasion on different levels. Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, we have bhoga that we need to bring in. So there's a lot this week, I think, because of Janmashtami. There's also another van full of festival stuff to bring in too, so
Okay. All hands on
please
deck.
help.